This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Echo, Lima, Delta, Shield. Okay, welcome to the latest pay-per-view reaction show here on the Place to Be Nation. There's so many P's in this introduction here, because this is the payback pay-per-view, okay? And with me tonight, we have Scott from the Place to Be Nation and the Main Event podcast. We've got my buddy Chris Zellner, Wrestling Observer Newsletter Hall of Fame voter. We've got my buddy Johnny Sauer from the Titans of Wrestling, and my good buddy Dylan Hells from the Wrestling Culture Podcast. And I'm Will, and I do this every month. And so with introductions out of the way, guys, this pay-per-view had a kickoff match. Last month it was the WLC. This month it's the hair versus mask match between Hornswoggle and Torito. Now, Scott, last month on the Main Event podcast, we were talking about this matchup, and I said, hey, look out for these two guys, Hornswoggle and Torito. They might steal the show. And they had a pretty great match last month. What'd you think of this month's match?
I thought it was okay. I thought it told a little bit of a better story. The result was fairly obvious. I mean, the mask is all that hashtag Midget Mantar has. So if he loses the mask, then who's really going to care anymore? So you knew the result. It was just a question of how they were going to get there. And I thought it was fun enough. But I had a big example that continued throughout the night was I'm just burnt out on this three-man broadcast team. I am so fried on all three of them. So boring. Same cliches. It's just, yeah. It is dreadful. And I think a lot of it is Vince's influence. There is a lot of headbanging backstage, apparently, between him and Triple H now over what to do just in general. And Vince, apparently, as we've seen from some leaked shows, still is in these guys' ears. And you could tell, it's just everything is so bland and they suck. I mean, they're just not good. and this show proved it. JBL is putting over. I mean, look, I understand we got to put over stuff, but I like it better when JBL no-sells midget matches. He's more entertaining that way, but he's almost turning into like a bad 80s heel. You know, he's not even like Jesse anymore. He's like Doc Hendricks or something. I mean, it's just brutal.
Doc Hendricks,
absolutely brutal. Yeah. The match itself was okay, and first of all, Brutus Beefcake has much more on El Torito than anybody because that shave job sucked.
It did, but on the post-match show, I was watching it while I was waiting for you guys, and holy shit, does that new haircut of Hornswoggle look awesome. You guys got to catch out the post-match show.
I didn't get a chance to look at it.
It's like a bald mullet, okay? It's awesome.
Oh. It's the riffraff from Rocky Horror Picture Show.
Yeah, pretty much, man. Except with cool. A few strings attached on the top, but it's cool. It's fun. So, Dylan, what'd you think?
I mean, I actually thought it was entertaining. I would hesitate to call it a good match in the sense that I don't think it was designed to be a good match. It was designed to get laughs, to let each guy get in some pretty fun or unique or cool spots or whatever. And by each guy, I mean all the other people. You know, I kind of joked about this on the Twitter, which I'll refer to probably 100 times on this podcast. But I kind of joked that I hope this is building to a War Games match with Lowe, Torito and Los Matadores versus the three MP Hornswoggle. Wouldn't it be great if that was the payoff for all the we need a War Games match that we hear every year? If that was the feud that they gave War Games to, I will say that this is probably my favorite feud of the year because it's completely ridiculous, but they've managed to be entertainingly ridiculous, which WWE often screws up.
Yes,
with these sort of comedic feuds. My only complaint is I really felt they had an opportunity to have I don't want to say a non-comedic match, because there's going to be comedic elements in any minis match, especially in the United States. but I felt like they could have done less overtly comedic stuff, or at least mixed in more sort of straight wrestling, which I thought last month's show did better.
Right.
And beyond, but that's not a major criticism, because what they did was still, I thought, really entertaining. It was just a little bit different from what I was hoping and expecting, but I thought it was good. I do totally agree with Scott's point about the commentary, though. I mean, if you watch this show, especially after having watched the NXT special show, you know, Takeover or whatever, like the discrepancy is it's so massive. The difference between the commentary you hear on those shows and the commentary you hear on the main shows, that it even makes it worse. You know, if the NXT shows didn't exist, I don't know that it would seem quite as bad. But when you watch these shows together in less than a week, my God, it's unbelievable how different and how shitty the main show quality announcing is compared to the NXT.
I agree. What do you think, Chris?
Yeah, Dylan pretty much hit it on the head. You know, as far as the match goes, there was a little too much comedy, I thought. But, you know, it is too expected. But that was a little too much here, because last month's, the hardcore match, it didn't have as much in it. You know, of course, you had all the weapons and stuff.
I think the comedy last month dealt with more the announcers, like JB Elf.
The Wii announcers.
Right.
The one thing I loved about this match, I think, the most was the sell job Torito did on the powerbomb, selling his tail that's regrowing, which is funny. You know, Dylan mentioned the whole thing about War Games. I tweeted to him that I think they should have the IWRG style cage match, where the last man in either gets his head shaved or a mask, something like that. And guys re-entering the cage and all that other shit that they do. But the match was fine for what it was. The shave job was pretty fun, especially when they just decided to go throw the shaving cream on well after they started shaving the head. And when Torino broke out the disposable razor, I thought for sure that he was going to go when Duggan was shaving Cornette's head on the Hornswoggle, blood would start flowing off.
Or when Sinister Minister shaved off Raven's scalp.
Yeah.
When did that happen? In TNA some years back. They did that, and Raven lost a hair match, and James Mitchell was shaving Raven with these clippers that probably shouldn't have been. I think they were sheep clippers. They shouldn't have been used on a human. And on live TV, and it was one of the few TNAs I've ever watched back then. It was like a deal, like pay a penny and you can watch it. And
I just want to say that I thought Johnny. I thought you said NA, not TNA. So I thought
Had
an Narcotics Anonymous meeting for a second.
Yes. Well, no, it could have been that too.
Anonymous wrestling.
But no, you actually saw like skin coming off of Razor's head.
Oh God!
It was one of the grosser things ever.
And I think Shaven Raven was a 1994 film.
Oh, yeah.
Nice. But let's not go down that route, guys. So let's just move on, all right? So,
yeah, no, I was going to say, really, about this match, though, my favorite spot was when they went to do the typical midget kicks out, throws them into the referee's hands, referee throws them down on top spot. It's the legendary midget spot. But when Hornswoggle was getting kicked out, Charles Robinson refused to try to catch him because he's too fat. And Hornswoggle goes, "Why didn't you try to catch me?" And he's like, "I'm not that strong." Because the running joke is that Hornswoggle is a midget, but he weighs as much as anyone on the main roster.
That's awesome. Okay, now Johnny, I'm sorry to get your thoughts. I thought your shaven Raven was your thoughts.
normally it would be.
Well, let's move on. Okay, so now we move on to the show proper, and I'll be honest, this was the match I was looking forward to the most. Sheamus versus Cesaro. I thought Paul Heyman did a great job of letting the crowd know CM Punk would not be there and that he would be at the Blackhawks game, and kind of neutered that for a while. And for a while it lasted. I thought it was a great match. Dylan, what'd you think?
My only real criticism of this is that it was too short. And it wasn't super short. I mean, it got like 12 minutes, so it's not like it didn't get any time at all. But, you know, they were like, to me, I think these are two of, if not the two best guys on the roster right now in the ring. I think you could make a case for a couple other guys, including Dean Ambrose. But to me, these are the best, probably the best two guys week to week on the roster. Cesaro's been saddled with RVD, who's just a terrible, horrifically bad wrestler at this point. And you know, it was nice to see him get to work somebody that actually is capable of doing anything in a match. That was real a nice change. the match itself, I mean, they had a match on Main Event last year that I thought was one of the 10 best matches of the year. This match was not as good as that, but I did think it was a great match. It was real hard hitting. My feed was not really, I mean, this was the beginning of my feed stalling, which would be a consistent problem throughout the night, which I think is more on my end than it is on the network's end. But so the match was a little bit choppy in terms of what I was watching. I didn't miss any of the actual matches. Just like there were points when the flow was a bit off. I liked Sheamus going to the multiple diving knees, like the multiple bombs away knee drops. I thought that was a pretty cool spot. That was a little bit different. Both of these guys, I think, they really excel at mixing up their offense. You know, they have huge offensive arsenals, both guys, really, especially for guys their size. And they're really good about mixing it up and delivering even their, you know, sort of typical stock spots in unique ways and ways that are different or unexpected or fresh. I think this match completely delivered on all of those levels, pretty much all the stuff you wanted to see. The counters were well-timed. I mean, really, the only major criticism of this match I have is that it was just too short. I thought it was building to be a potential match of the year candidate match, and then it ended 5 minutes too soon. Now, having said that, the finish I actually had no problem with. You know, I think if you're going to do a banana peel finish, that's pretty much the best way to do it was the way they did it. Because, you know, it's after the Cesaro swing, and he gets rolled up, and it's kind of believable that that could happen. It doesn't really hurt Cesaro, or not big time. I'm still not sold on Cesaro in the way he's been packaged post-Mania for a variety of reasons that go way beyond what we can cover on this podcast. But, you know, it was a very good, borderline great match that would have been put over to the next level with a few more minutes. But it's hard to bitch because the rest of the show was so good. You know, I mean, if you're going to save time and the rest of the show sucks, well, then it's going to piss me off.
Right.
But if you save time and the rest of the show is good, you know, it's hard to bitch.
I made the comment that it felt like a SmackDown main event versus like a pay-per-view match where they give them 20. What'd you think,
I think that's
Johnny?
Fair comparison.
What's that?
What'd you think?
I loved it. I thought, you know, I would have loved for this to go on 30 minutes, but it's the opener, and 12 was good, and I thought the finisher surprised me out of nowhere, and at first I'm like, oh yeah, no, that makes sense, because, you know, both guys are dizzy, he's going for the neutralizer, and boom, and Sheamus pulls one out of his ass, and I just think these two guys work together so well. I agree with Dylan, I mean, as far as so these two are amongst the best in the company. A lot of people don't say that about Sheamus, but these people are wrong and dumb, and that's all there is to
it. I agree. I love Sheamus.
Yeah, you know. I mean, I hate Sheamus. Why? Because of his silly interviews. Okay, fine, but what about in the ring? Oh, well, you know, he's awesome. Well, then fuck the silly interviews. Who gives a shit? You know, it's in the ring, Sheamus is awesome. And they click. They've got a chemistry. So I just keep it going as far as I'm concerned, man. Keep this feud going. You're right, though. Yeah, a SmackDown main event is the opener for an awesome pay-per-view. That's a great analogy. I enjoyed the hell out of this. Because I really didn't enjoy the midgets match. And I wanted something to kick this thing off in high gear. And that was it.
Right.
I thought it was a blast.
Okay. What about you, Chris?
Yeah, you know, this was a match that I thought probably would be the match of the show going in. And it ended up being actually probably the third best match on the show, which says a lot about this show. I love the finish because it was something that I don't think anyone saw coming. And that's always fun in wrestling because, you know, who would have expected the little inside cradle deal from Sheamus? He doesn't normally win matches like that. It's always bro kick or one of his other 5 or 10 finishers he's used. So, to have that inside cradle makes me also think that this isn't over yet. These two are going to have another match somewhere, either on TV or maybe Money in the Bank, although I probably expect them to be in one of the Money in the Bank matches.
Yeah, but, and more importantly, it keeps the U.S. title off of Cesaro, and those mid-card belts are usually death.
Yeah, exactly.
By the way, Cesaro's Wide World of Sports logo on his jacket is fantastic.
Yeah, between that, the King of Swing logo he's used with the old King of the Ring style look. Yeah, it's been great lately. Heyman was fantastic to start off, like that was mentioned earlier.
Yeah.
You know, do it segueing from CM Punk to breaking the streak and all this other shit. And, it's, you know, Cesaro, it seems like it's just they're in the holding pattern with him right now. That's for the people that know what's going on, we look at it. You know, people that don't know what's going on, I wonder how they feel about it. So that's right. One thing about the booking of him right now is, you know, we know that what the plans are, but the people that don't know what the plans are, how are they going to react to Cesaro down the road if they don't start doing more important stuff with him?
All right. What do you think, Scott? Because, first of all, let me apologize to Scott because I was texting him while this match was going on. I was like, man, this match is brutal, man. I can't believe it. And he's like, man, I'm really enjoying it. I was like, oh, I meant like brutal as in stiff.
Like, what are you talking about?
So, yeah, I keep forgetting that, you know, the word brutal can mean stiff and nasty and ugly, or it can mean it sucks. And no, I didn't. Scott, what'd you think?
I'm gonna be a little guilty of what Johnny was just complaining about, but not in the total sense. I'm one of those ones that loves and hates aspects of Sheamus. I don't hate Sheamus. I hate Sheamus as a babyface, but I don't hate Sheamus in general. I don't have an issue with his promos. I barely pay attention to what he says half the time anyway. But I think he's an exceptional in-ring guy. Sheamus is my kind of worker. I like a guy who can work a match very stiff, a lot of strikes, doesn't fiddle around sometimes with a lot of grappling nonsense. He just likes to strike you until you can't get up. And Cesaro is the perfect counter for him because he likes to work that style too with some grappling. And you have two guys who really like to dictate pace based on just lots of strikes, pins. And that's what I loved about this match tonight.
Bowling?
What's that?
Sounds like bowling. Strikes and pins.
Strikes and pins, exactly. With a little, yeah, that'd be great. And Sheamus would use a pin on Cesaro's head. That would be great. Kind of like when Slick was teaching Kamala how to bowl. That'd be even better. the only thing I hated was the end. I thought that was the shits. I'm sorry. You take the one thing. Now, is it going to hurt Cesaro in the long run? No, but we're talking about this in a bubble. You take the one thing that people really love about Cesaro, and that's the swing, and Sheamus, in essence, no-sells it, which I think is pretty shitty, to be honest with you. But that was, to me, that was the overall tone of how the endings of these matches went tonight. A lot of predictability, a lot of safe endings, and I think there was a huge example of that later on in the show.
Okay.
I agree with you that Cesaro being U.S. champion doesn't do anything for him, but when you're going to pigeonhole a title match and you're not looking for a shitty schmoz ending, I guess there's no other way to do it. You'd rather Cesaro get caught on a fluke than to get bro kicked. So I will say that. I don't know.
I didn't know the swing.
I just want to say this real quick, because I actually think the finish serve two purposes. And I understand Scott's point, but I don't really think he no-sold it. I think, you know, the fact that he didn't even get off the ground to execute the spot doesn't bother me. If he had got up and hit like a bro kick out of nowhere, it would have been way worse.
Exactly.
To me, I thought it kind of served two purposes, which was, one, it, you know, the swing is a babyface move. And for the time being, it looks like they're going to keep Cesaro heel. And you know, this is a way maybe to distance himself from that move as his go-to all the time, because now it's you know, proven to be ineffective in at least one context. The other, and I think more important thing, is Sheamus has been hitting these surprise bro kicks from everywhere, so we've kind of been conditioned to see the bro kick as death. And I would like to think this feud is going to keep going on, which means there may be a point where Cesaro actually kicks out of the bro kick. In fact, I almost think there will be that point.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's more effective if you set the table for that than if you do it in the first match. But having said that, this was a finish where I, as I was watching it, I thought, I could totally see how people would hate this. I could totally see both sides to that.
Well,
I agree with your philosophy, though. I concur. I like your thinking. I do. But again, and also, that doesn't take away with how great this match was. I just love the pacing. I just love watching Sheamus. I kind of miss Sheamus. I got to go back because I have a lot of the back DVDs, and obviously they're all on the network now. But I need to watch like 2010 Sheamus when he was kind of in that good heel mode, because he almost took it to like that. He took the strikes to that next level, and I think he's missing that. Maybe that's why I don't like him as a babyface. I think he's missing that extra. It's like, hey fella, giggle giggle, kick. It's just running so tired now. I liked the angry Irish, you know, son of a bitch, you know, like thug Sheamus. I kind of miss that. And I think that would make his matches even better if he was kind of serving it in a more dastardly, you know, devious, malicious way, rather than just like, hey, fella, giggle, giggle, fun joke, bro kick, win match. And I think that's what's making his TV matches so lousy, is because of that. Not lousy, I shouldn't say. That's kind of a strong word. Not as memorable as what we saw tonight. So I'll say that. So I agree with Johnny that I'm not going to be like, Sheamus sucks. Well, except for his matches. You know, that's ignorant. I'm just saying that his in-ring work is tremendous, but there's some other aesthetic aspects of his character that I think really need an overhaul. But right now the WWE is in a very weird, safe, scary place where they don't want to, they're in a, you know, the money news and the network and that kind of jazz, I think, kind of freaked him out. And I think that's where this rumored Triple H Vince power struggle is. And you saw a lot of Vince getting his way tonight. And I think this match was one of them. I don't think the title needed to be on the line, but it would have been nice to have seen kind of Cesaro get a stable win here. But it doesn't take away from the fact the match itself was very, very entertaining. And I agree that I think a rematch tomorrow night on Raw will be a lot of fun. So I do agree with that.
Okay. Well, moving on, we had two unannounced matches take place on this show. And there was this one and Kofi Kingston versus Bo Dallas match we'll talk about in a few. And that's Cody Rhodes and Goldust versus Rybacksel. Mm-hmm. I'm going to agree with the commentary on one thing. I think Rybacksel has become a much better tag team after working together a year.
Oh, yeah.
You know, funny how that can happen. But having said that, you got to give Goldust props to get a Let's Go Goldust chant after that crowd was so uninterested in this match. And Goldust is still one of the greatest face and perils. And I still love Cody's little hot comebacks, too, setting up those hot finishes. So having said that, those are my quick thoughts. Chris, what'd you think about this impromptu tag match?
This was a really good match. I had noted the Dylan on Twitter about how Rybacksel has gotten so good lately as far as their teamwork and the way their psychology and working matches. I mean, they are becoming one of the top teams of the last 15 years, I think, in that company. And, Ryback has found himself in this position, I think. And it's that sucked that he doesn't get the chance to show more of his character outside the ring on television, you know, do more promos, stuff like that. But, this was the right finish because they're furthering the angle. It's interesting to see how they're going to go with this, to see if Goldust is going to pick a new partner and how Cody will react, and if that's what's up with Cody heel turn. I noted on Twitter that I thought that this would be a good spot for Sami Zayn, maybe, to debut. It's like Goldust's new partner, somebody he found in NXT, to bring him up and then start him off that way, maybe feuding with Cody. Goldust was tremendous in this match, as always. He is such an, you know, underrated utility man. He can do anything in that company and just do it well. But, I love this match.
What about you there, Johnny?
I love this, too. I thought it was a blast. And as far as his Ryback's character, I think one of my favorite things I've seen that Rybacksel does
is, and they showed this on here, it was like from SmackDown or Raw or whatever, where they're walking by the Rhodes brothers after they've been beat. This is, okay, nice losing streak. And they do a thumbs down and a raspberry. I'm stealing that in life. You just, the next time someone's there, like, yeah, and that was really good. You know, that's awesome. That's such a dick move. Loved it. They're little matching French Resistance caps. And they've become an amazing team. And I think that's definitely one of those, well, we had to work together, and no one's, maybe somebody backstage is giving them a few tips, you know, but they've become a really sweet team, despite the dopey name. And I love that. I love there aren't many bigger Goldust fans than me, you know, and you're right. He just brings it. Now, I don't think he's going to go get a new tag team partner whatsoever. It's going to be him constantly going, no, come on, brother, until he goes, don't you listen to me, and slaps him, and it'll be something like that. I don't think he's going to go, well, if you say so, Cody, I'm going to get a new partner. No.
You know what this is? This is the Booker T. Goldust tease of the breakup of their team, where, remember Goldust having... Right. And it eventually led to like a title tag match where they'd have to break up if they didn't win the titles. They win the titles.
That's good. I don't think the titles though.
Maybe not the titles.
I think Cody's going heel. Eventually,
I don't think they need him. He's a better face. What do you think, Dylan?
Well, okay. First of all, I thought the match was real good, which doesn't surprise me because, as Chris knows, and actually, I think Johnny may know this too. I've been high on Ryback for a long time.
Yeah,
I thought it was a good move to put them together. In a way, I think it sucks because I do think Ryback, our good buddy Loss from Pro Wrestling Only. Charles always makes the point that Ryback, he feels and carries himself like a main eventer, and he feels wasted in this team. And I kind of agree with that in the sense that there is something about his presence that feels much bigger than a mid-card tag team. I mean, I think that that is absolutely true. On the other hand, he's somebody that I feel like they had to do something different with him because the way they killed, I mean, I was, this is something I know me and Johnny just agreed on at the time. I hated the finish to that Hell in a Cell match with Punk. I thought that absolutely killed Ryback. I feel like ever since then, after that point, he was kind of stuck in this weird role where he found himself as a talker. He really got over his heel, but it was almost like the company didn't have faith in him, and I think it sort of showed sometimes in his performances, but he's gotten really good.
What I thought killed him was when they had him, like, quit because his leg hurt in a match.
Yeah, that was bad. I mean, that was terrible.
Was like,
that was
like,
he was really mishandled. I think he's been one of the most mishandled guys in the last 2 years, which is why I think it's such a good sign that he's done so well in this team. You know, he's really embraced it. And the guy's still really over live. I mean, I've gone to 2 house shows in the last year where Ryback was one of the most over guys on the roster in that live crowd setting. And, I thought this was – what I really liked about this match was – for a match that you knew wasn't going to get a ton of time, they managed to have a true sort of traditional Southern tag match with some cool spots, which is kind of a requirement now in today's world, and nothing felt rushed. And that's not always easy to do because it's real easy to sort of rush the heat segment or just go bananas with the spots to the point where they kind of don't mean anything. And they really balanced it out well. The spot with Cody getting powerbombed into Goldust, I mean, that was brutal.
That was awesome.
That was one of the nastiest spots on the show, filled with nasty spots. And the finish itself, I thought, with Cody getting caught and then hit with the version of the shell shock, I thought that was a really cool, creative finish that was completely logical and in keeping with what you would expect. This was a good match. It's kind of funny because, in a way, it was like, I really wanted the Usos to wrestle Harper and Rowan on the show, and I was kind of disappointed that they didn't. But this match probably is about as good as that match would have been anyway. So, again, you don't really lose anything. It's kind of the theme of this is there were things on the show where I felt like
maybe they could have been slightly different, but they didn't lose anything for them. And if anything, it might have actually helped the show, even though in a way I was kind of nervous and on the edge of my seat at times going forward throughout the show. One other thing I will say about the angle, the post-match angle, I think the opportunity is really there for Cody to be Bo Dallas's first protege, because Cody doesn't believe in himself. Yeah. He does not believe in himself at all. And Cody is sort of the understudy for Bo Dallas would be completely awesome.
Oh, that's fantastic. It leads into my giant theory that the Rotundo family were brainwashed by Kevin Sullivan, and it's all a giant way to get at the Rhodes eventually.
Christ.
Via the Rotundos and the Mulligans. And now down to the Rhodes. This has been a 30-year conspiracy, man.
You know who else would fit in that angle, too? And it'd be a great way to reunite them is Sandow.
Oh, Christ.
The Rhodes Scholar with Bo Dallas.
Okay, Scott, what do you think about my man Johnny's theory that this is a Kevin Sullivan conspiracy to get back at the Dusty's family?
Well, once he mentioned the Mulligans, I thought they'd all wake up in prison. But making $100 bills in the basement. But no, I agree. I think it was Chris that said it. I think that Rybacksel has definitely improved as a team. I think if nothing else, they have salvaged Ryback as something. Curtis Axel looks terrible with a do-rag on, or whatever the hell he was wearing tonight, a beret or something. But that looked brutal. I would love a reverse turn. Have them team one more time tomorrow night on Raw. They lose again, and Goldust turns heel and beats the snot out of Cody, and Goldust kind of becomes, you know, kind of works with the authority kind of thing. I still think you'll get great matches out of them, and it makes Cody the babyface, which is really what needs to happen. So,
I like it, except that Dustin is such an awesome babyface. I mean, every time he works babyface, he does so great, man.
I agree with you. I agree. I'm trying to think of a way for them to do this without, unless you just break them up and move on, you know, and you just don't do tags anymore and we don't talk about it. That's the only other way I could think of. You don't want to see Cody turn heel. He hasn't really had enough of a chance to really flourish as a babyface, and he can, but the match was solid. I enjoyed it. I definitely like Rybacksel as a tag team. They've definitely improved. When it comes to the tag division, and we don't want to go too deep into NXT.
Oh, we don't.
I'm just waiting for the Ascension. I love those guys. I think it's just a matter of time, but this was a good match tonight, and I think the Rhodes, something's down the pike. I don't think it'll have anything to do with Blackjack Mulligan or, you know, making $50 bills in the shed, but something is going to happen. I think it's going to happen tomorrow night. I don't think they're going to wait too much longer for it. I don't know what it's going to be, but I just think of the whole scope of things. Dustin needs to stay, Cody needs to stay babyface.
I agree. Yeah. Moving on. So then we have a match that was the last match announced for the show prior to these other matches. And that was Rusev. What's that?
Thanks to Twitter. No, I'm sorry. That was the other one. Thanks to Twitter.
Oh, okay. Was Rusev versus Big E announced through Twitter?
No, that was the Kofi one.
Oh, yeah, okay. I found out about it on the pre-show, the Kofi match. But so, Johnny, Rusev versus Big E, America versus Mother Russia, what do you think?
Okay, here's what I liked. I liked that Big E changed his tights to red, white, and blue with the lion in front for the occasion. I liked the fact that in pure wrestling perfection of what everything in wrestling is, who can wave their flag hardest is going to win the flag waving contest. God damn it. They did that. And then Big E spears Rusev through the fucking ropes to the outside in a spot that made everyone in the room here jump up and go, holy
fucking shit. What the fuck? Because up until that point, we were like, it's okay. That chick's got a great ass. And then, boom, we're like, oh, my God. And I'm like, oh, shit's picking up now. And for the first time, Rusev shows vulnerability. And he, but he still, you know, manages to pull off a squash. Poor Big E, but I'm liking the way they're building up Rusev. I like the fact that he looks to Lana and wait till she says, Rusev, now cry. You know, and that's, oh, it. I love that shit, man. I'm a child of the 80s. It was a squash, but that goddamn, that spear by Big E through that the ropes was the first of a lot of, not to be, you know, typical, holy shit moments with spots on this show. I was like, Jesus, damn, that was sick, dude. That was a sick move.
I give it
a thumbs up for being what it was with that amazingly crazy move. So
I agree. I'm glad that Rusev showed some vulnerability. What do you think, Scott?
I said to the guys I was watching the show with, I said, if you remember that rumor way back that Nikita Koloff was supposed to be Hulk Hogan's opponent at WrestleMania 2 instead of Bundy.
Right.
Rusev's theme would have been Nikita Koloff's theme. I just closed my eyes and thought, man, that would be an awesome theme for him to walk up to the cage in L.A. with, and Jesse and Elvira put, well, maybe not Elvira putting it over, but anyway.
It's conspiracy.
Elvira did a pretty good job on that show, man. I'm going to hype up Elvira.
She was well,
Elvira, were you?
You better stick to Elvira, or you won't go out with me tonight. I'm sure her and Jesse did. But, I love Rusev. I mean, I'm a fan of these big Haas guys anyway, and they're doing a great job of just continuously. They just need to. I hope with a lot of these guys right now, the Cesaro. Well, Cesaro's already established himself enough, but Rusev and a lot of these NXT alums, that they just take their time. There's no rushing. Same thing with Reigns, in my opinion. There's plenty of time to get these guys where you need them to be, without having a rush or panic. And Rusev is in that spot now. You know, we haven't seen him in a legitimate match yet. I mean, he got chucked around a little bit by Big E. The spear was awesome. But I think he's just an unbelievable character. He's a good, bona fide, straight-up heel to have right now. And I think it's a solid move to continue him slowly but surely working. He's past the jobber stage. He's at, like, that lower mid-card level. I hate to say that about Big E because I was a big Big E fan, but boy, did he just fall right off the cliff. Now I think it's time to continue with like mid card and slowly work your way up. And then maybe by SummerSlam, maybe slightly after that, he starts working upper mid cards and maybe start being used by the Authority in some type of role. But, I'm excited to have him right now. And I think he's a good, solid old school heel for the roster to have.
What's your take, Dylan?
Well, I think, and this is a point that I really want to emphasize, is I really feel bad for Big E, because here's a guy who really has, I think, improved, and he always works hard. You know, he doesn't always have good matches, but he always works hard, which to me is really important as a fan, especially in this era where there's so much TV and there's so much stuff that's out there. And these guys, sometimes they're working NXT, and then they're working the main roster at the same time. I mean, so I feel bad for him because there was a period where he was really getting over, and, you know, holding that title, I think, really hurt him, which speaks to your point earlier, Will, about that. But so I do feel bad for him. Having said that, like Scott, I actually like Rusev. I probably don't like him as much as Scott does, but I really enjoy him. I think it's a nice change of pace. I think it's something different. You know, I don't know how much the act, my big concern with him is sort of the same thing as my concern with Del Rio always was, which is how much of it is his second and how much of it is him. How much of it was Ricardo that was getting Del Rio over and how much of it is Lana that's getting Rusev over. And I think you have to be careful about that going forward, but so far they've been fine with it. For the, you know, 4 minutes or however long this last one, very long, I thought it was really fun. Big E is very, very good at these super sprint heavyweight matches. He's excellent at them. He's had a ton of good ones like this in the, you know, however long he's been on the roster versus a bunch of different guys. He's real, real good at this style. I think this is really where he excels. So You know, this was a good good performance from Big E. Rusev came out of it looking good. I hope they find something to do with Big E coming out of it. I'd actually like to see them go back to the Big E Mark Henry tag team, which they sort of teased for a while, because Mark Henry's not doing anything either, and I think they can have good matches and actually add to the tag roster, which has been pretty, you know, has been slowly thinned out, so to speak. So that's something I wouldn't mind seeing. And I think Rusev is going to be, I think he'll probably be a, effectively by WWE standards, a main event guy, no living in Survivor Series. Whether that's going to work, I think, is debatable. But I think he will be that sort of, I kind of think that it's possible he's going to be Sheamus' next opponent after Cesaro, but we'll see.
Yeah, it's possible. What about you, Chris? Anything else to add before we move on?
Yeah, I think this was Rusev's best week on the roster. I mean, NXT, like a maniac destroying Mojo Rawley.
That was awesome.
Tonight, I mean, him and Big E, they were throwing bombs on each other. That was a hard-hitting ass match.
Speak into your phone, Chris. You're fading out.
Okay. That was a very hard-hitting match. They were beating the hell out of each other. Yeah, the Rusev, that kick that Big E's chest was insane. Lana, by the way, that dress was basically painted on tonight. It was so tight. I mean, she is ridiculous right now. And, you know, you talk about her and him as an act. Believe me, he does not want that act to be broken up, because he's seen how it goes whenever you break up acts than a real life relationship behind the scenes. Now that ends up. That's Kevin Sullivan. So, he's praying that Lana stays with him, I'm sure.
Well, you know, good for Rusev.
Yeah. Hey guys, do you think maybe Big E is getting the typical, okay, initial push, now let's test you?
I think he didn't get over as much as they expected him to, and now
I think they're giving him the test. We're going to test you. We're going to test you now, and see how you handle, you know, being on the bottom after your initial push. It's a strange philosophy, but I call it the Ziggler.
The Ziggler. Well, we still got a lot of the show to cover, so Johnny, I want to let everybody just really quick answer. Do you think he's getting the test, or do you think that his big push days are over? We'll start with you, Scott.
I think he's got a push left in him. I think they have no one to blame but themselves, because they're the ones. He won the title, and then they never wrestled him, and all he did was sit in the announcer seat and talk about other matches. He never wrestled. So they did it themselves. It's all their fault. But I think he's got a push left in him.
What about you, Dylan?
I think the answer is both. I don't think it's an either or. I think he didn't get quite as over as they thought, which is partially because of the booking and probably partially because of him. I admit that, even though I'm a fan of the guy.
Right.
And I think that at the same time, you know, they do this. They test all these guys. So I think the answer is actually both.
Chris.
I'm curious to see if this is going to be part of this, theory that's going around through some of the tweets by some of the wrestlers like Troop and Xavier Woods and Kofi about this, like, discrimination type deal going on where Rusev's beating all black guys up. I wonder and how it may lead to, like, a reformation of a nation type.
No, it should lead to Darren Young coming out and being the black gay guy to fight against Russians and their anti-gay feelings.
and if Big E will be like a leader of that faction or something like that. Because I think he'll be better as a heel person. I think he has the personality after they really get over in that role.
Well, speaking of Kofi Kingston... Okay. Him and Bo Dallas were supposed to have a match tonight. And, man, this Kane crap, this helps nobody. I was so pissed off when this happened. I thought, you know, okay, we'll give Bo Dallas a nice little win here. Didn't happen. I thought Bo Dallas's expressions after the match were pretty priceless, but Christ, that Kane stuff was horrible. Scott, thoughts on Kingston versus Dallas and Kane?
I think the whole thing was crap for a couple reasons. Number one, this Kane thing is just, it's running its course. They're keeping him on screen because for some godforsaken reason, they feel we need one more match with him and Daniel Bryan, for God's sakes. They've already wrestled like 15 times on TV, and Daniel Bryan's like 13-2. So can we just move on with it? But number two, this is not a knock on Bo Dallas, the guy, or whatever, you know, whatever his real name is, Rotundo. I don't even know. I don't remember what his first name is, but that gimmick worked perfectly fine in NXT in that smaller venue with smaller, and it was organic. This gimmick is going to absolutely bomb with these big crowds. First of all, it's not organic. It's like, hey, they're just taking the NXT guy and bringing him here. I think that's a terrible idea. I just don't think this. He's whiny. It's just the whole. He's just seems so wishy washy and milk toasty, even though he's a heel. I just don't think the gimmick's gonna get over with big crowds. I don't think he's a bad worker, but I just don't think the gimmick's gonna get over with large arena crowds. I just think it seems very indie. And as much as we like indie workers, indie gimmicks, I just don't think it's going to reflect a bigger crowd. I liked it in NXT, but when you're dealing with a crowd of, 500 people, that's one thing. But when you're dealing with a crowd of, 17,000 people, I just don't think it's going to reflect.
What do you think, Dylan? Do you agree with Scott or do you disagree?
I have very mixed feelings on Dallas as a character as a whole. First of all, I had no problem with the King stuff, which is odd coming from me because I dislike the King stuff typically at least as much as Will does. But it didn't really bother me. I think it actually showed continuity, which is one of the reasons it didn't bother me, because so often they don't do this. And basically Kofi was being punished for taking cheap shots at the authority, which at least makes sense from a storyline perspective. So I had very little problem with it. I mean, I would have, not only that, but it saved me from a Kofi Kingston Bo Dallas match. And if there's one match I absolutely don't want to see, I mean, that'd be near the top of the list. I guess Kofi versus RVD would be number one.
Oh,
but Kofi versus Bo Dallas, I mean, Bo Dallas is a guy I saw botch running the ropes twice in one night at a house show one time. So I'm not exactly very high on him as a worker. He's definitely improved since then, but he's not somebody I want to see. He hasn't shown me anything in on the main roster. I'll say that. All his best stuff.
He improved a lot since then.
Yeah. As a character, yes. As a worker, I mean, when he's in there with, very, very good guys or solid hands, he's certainly held up his end of the match. I don't want to say that he hasn't. But he's not shown me, and he's not been given much of a chance to be fair. But
it's been a week and a half. So,
sure. But I did see him before in his previous time, and he was sub dog shit. I mean, one of the worst wrestlers I've ever seen, level bad. So he's like in the Jeep Swinson level category for me. And while he's not, while he's clearly better than that at now, I mean, there's no question he's improved a lot since then. The point is, when that's your starting point, you have to have a lot more of a resume than having good matches with Sami Zayn. I mean, you're going to have to do a lot better than that to convince me that you don't suck. And the main point of all this is I damn sure don't want to see him working Kofi Kingston. So, if there's one guy I don't want to see him working, it's a guy who can't have a good match with anybody unless the other guy's leading.
Well, at least they didn't do the Kofi Bo Kane three-way. So we spared that.
Having said that, to Scott's point, I actually disagree with Scott, and I think I agree with Johnny in the sense that I've come around on Bo Dallas for gimmick. Bo Dallas, the gimmick, I actually think can get over, especially if it is presented in a way where your anti-Cena fans see Bo Dallas as what he really is, which is basically a guy whose gimmick is a pot shot at John Cena. I think that's what a lot of the Bo Dallas gimmick is. It's like a thinly veiled sort of, ha-ha, we're taking a shot at John Cena and how Lily White do you all think he is, and what milquetoast do you think he is. So I think he has a chance.
Okay.
And I think the hokier he is, the better he is.
Yep.
What do you think, Chris?
Yeah, well, it's too early to start jumping on Bo Dallas, the gimmick, just yet, because, he's only been on television for a week and a half, 2 weeks. And, I'm pretty damn sure we're going to have a rematch of this tomorrow night with Bo and Kofi. So get ready, Dylan. It's coming.
That's true.
Yeah.
Anything else to add, Chris, before we move to Johnny?
Yeah, Bo's gimmick is going to get over, I think. And the shirt, he's got the catchphrase. I think he's got a shot. Now, his ring work definitely has to get better, and he has improved. But the jury is still way out on him right now.
Johnny, defend this segment.
Okay, I love this segment because I didn't know that Kofi had been bashing the Authority. But when King came out and was doing that, I'm looking at my buddy, I'm like, I'm sure, I look at him, I go, I bet Kofi like said something on the pre-show I missed or something about the Authority. And sure enough, they got all that. I'm like, okay, makes sense. And then I have no problem with Kane as their enforcer. I love that Bo was looking at Kofi like, yeah, we'll take him on together. And then immediately dashed outside. Like, I'm sorry. I remember when Bo Dallas was brought up to the main roster briefly and then stunk worse than skunk shit. Yes. I watched him in NXT. He's gotten good. And that character is so much fun. And, yeah, there are going to be characters like Emma that if they don't explain why this is what it is, the crowd's going to shit on him and he's like, whatever. Bo Dallas is going to be okay because, you know, it worked for Kurt Angle. You know, it's basically sort of the same thing.
Yeah, I look
Kurt
at
Angle,
it positively.
Worked for Kurt Angle.
He's just missing the bling on the tooth, you know.
Yeah, okay, the DDP.
Yeah,
you know,
Nova. What was Nova's gimmick where he was the instructor, the health instructor?
Diamond Dean.
Yes, but Bo Dallas is so hateable in this that he can get this over, and he's going to get it over. I have full confidence that he's going to get this over.
I think you're right as long as his teeth continue to stay yellow. So, moving on.
Yeah.
Next.
It's funny. And leading to my theory, he's a motivational speaker who, behind those eyes, is Satan. And who is Satan? Kevin Sullivan. Who is Bo? A Rotundo, a Wyndham, who he has taken over. It's all a big conspiracy, man.
Hey, and to answer your question, Scott, his name is Wyndham Rotundo.
Wyndham Rotundo is his name.
Oh, that's right, because he's his godfather's Barry or his uncle or something.
His uncle.
That's right, yeah.
Yeah,
Bray is Wyndham. Bo is Taylor Rotundo.
Whatever. Stop fucking.
And they're all under the spell of Kevin Sullivan.
Who needs facts on a show like this? God damn it! Last time I ever get a Wrestling Observer Newsletter Hall of Fame voter on my show. Anyway, moving on. We're gonna go, and you know I have to start with Dylan on this one because it's his favorite wrestler, RVD. Bad News Barrett. I'm loving the Barrett gimmick. Unfortunately, like Cesaro, they're saddling him with RVD, which is just kind of killing my enthusiasm to watch him wrestle. Because I think Barrett, Sheamus, Cesaro, if they just make it like a United Kingdom brawl fest, I would be in heaven. What do you think, Dylan?
Well, I was, first of all, I've loved the Bad News Barrett gimmick since the very first time I saw it, when everybody was panning and saying it was going to kill this guy's career. Which I saw a lot of different people say that, including people who, you know, are off more. What?
I said rub it in. Like rub it
oh,
in.
Oh, okay.
Rub the.
Oh, okay. Oh God. I heard something totally different. I'll leave that.
Rub the lotion on my skin.
No, I heard rub it out. I was like, man, I'm not going to do that while I'm lying to you guys. Anyway.
Well, you were excited.
I've loved the gimmick from the very beginning. I thought it had a chance to be a springboard for him. It actually has been a springboard for him. He's really gotten over. And one thing I will say, this match was surprisingly over with the crowd. Like on paper, you'd look at this and think that this could be a potentially like quiet match. But RVD, as bad as he is, in my opinion, he stays over. I'll give him that. You know, he's a guy that does stay over. And I got to really say, I thought this was a real testament to Wade Barrett, because while I wouldn't really call this a good match, I thought it was watchable. You know, RVD's offense was pretty horrific for the most part, you know, punches that are missing by 4.5 feet, chin breakers where his head is above Wade Barrett's head. I don't know how that works. Just like really off looking stuff. But
Wade Barrett, you know, he took some good bumps. His offense looked really good and really stiff. They actually managed to get in some pretty interesting near falls toward the finish. I don't know how I felt about Barrett still using the bull hammer after having hit the post. But you know, the whole thing with him is that they're getting that over as a kill shot finisher, and he at least was selling it after the fact. So,
yeah.
To me, this match was a real testament to Wade Barrett because it was watchable. It was not bad at all. It was probably the most watchable RVD match since he's been back. And to me, that says a lot about Wade Barrett because, you know, RVD's had bad matches with Cesaro, and Cesaro's a guy who wasn't having bad matches with anybody for about 20 consecutive months, and he wrestled the whole roster. So yeah, I think this is a proof that Barrett is a guy who you can really, really work, as well as a guy who has a good character.
Good, good. What about you, Chris?
Oh, definitely. And the joke was made about the RVD being Old Yeller, and he definitely is Old Yeller. And even to the color of his hair, it looks like the dog. So yeah, it is time for him to the pasture. Maybe not shoot him directly, but it's time for him to go. And he's seen his better days. But hey, to Dylan's point, he was over with the crowd, which is kind of easy because people are chanting RVD. So that's kind of easy to do. Barrett's got to move on now to something bigger. But the thing is, what? I'd love to see, I mentioned on Twitter, I would love to see him and Cena have another round at it again with this gimmick. You know, I think those could be some really good matches. Because Cena and Bray, I guess, is going to be over with now, I would hope.
God, I hope so.
So that would give them something different to go to. Yeah. And Bray's, I mean, it's Wade's time to shine. So, yeah. This match is fine for what it was.
Johnny.
Yeah, I thought this was fun. I like RVD. The rest of you guys can kiss my ass. Always have. And I will recognize every complaint you have about him and still say, I like him. I'm one of those people who are out there because he's over. You know, he's over. And he's over with me. He's over with my friends. And also they go, boy, look, he missed that. That was sloppy. I don't give a shit. I like RVD. I always have. So, but yes, this was his best match since he's been back by far. But I wanted to address, yeah, what you're saying about the bull hammer. I love the way he sold the fact that he was looking at, like, on, oh, God, do I need to, I have to, and uses it, because that's his weapon. And even though he knew he was hurt, that the only way he was going to win was to use the bull hammer. And then he sells it afterwards, too. And that little touch was my favorite part of that match. And I thought, yeah, he was a very fine, watchable match. And they're going to be turning him babyface so fast. it's got to happen quick. So maybe his next bad news is against a heel.
I could see that working. What do you think, Scott?
Absolutely, I could see that working. I love Barrett. Obviously, the company likes him a lot, or else he wouldn't have gotten the IC title so soon after returning. I'm 50-50 on RVD. I agree with Johnny. I think the guy still can bring a lot to the table. You know, all the years that he got guys over, he was over other guys. Now he's just kind of paying it forward. Is he the same RVD as, you know, even 2006? Obviously not. But he still has the star power. He still brings the energy from the crowd. But he doesn't bring the same to the ring, so the matches aren't the same as they would have been. But, you know, that's just age. But I was fine with it. I'd like to see him work with a heel. I think that'd be pretty cool. I think it's a bigger example of the whole roster flux that could be happening over the next few months. But I enjoyed the match. I thought it was pretty good. I don't think it was, in terms of mid-card, I don't think it was as good as Cesaro or Sheamus, but it was definitely good, and I like Barrett. I think he'll continue to shine.
All right. Well, hey, guys, right now we're going to take a quick break so we can get in some Place to Be Nation commercials and ads or whatever my good friend Justin JR, Scott's partner, decides to put in there. And then when we come back, we're going to talk about the main events and the big Stephanie McMahon-Daniel Bryan showdown.
What's up, everybody? This is Kevin Kelly from Ring of Honor Wrestling. Make sure you check out The Kevin Kelly Show each and every week. PlaceToBeNation.com. We'll be talking about wrestling in the past and wrestling today, plus be talking about all kinds of sports and pop culture, whatever's on your mind, too. We'll answer your questions each and every week. The Kevin Kelly Show, right here, PlaceToBeNation.com.
Let me know you in the house.
This is the king of old school, Steve Corino, and you've heard all the rumors, and it's true. The Steve Corino Show is here. We talk about wrestling. We talk about baseball, movies, television, anything you want to talk about. New guest every week. That's right. The Steve Corino Show every week here on the Place to Be Nation.
Hey, this is Bauer from The Bauer Show, sports and more. You can check out The Bauer Show podcast every Wednesday and Friday right here at PlaceToBeNation.com.
The Bauer Show.
Chad, do you hate it when commercials run and run?
What do you mean, Parv?
Oh, never mind.
Listen to Where the Big Boys Play on PlaceToBeNation.com and find us on iTunes. We are the only WCW Supercard exclusive podcast.
Hey, this is Rob Naylor. Do you still enjoy pro wrestling? Believe it or not, I still do. So you better join myself and Will on the Google Wrestling Podcast exclusively at PlaceToBeNation.com.
Shit, I wasn't ready. Hey, this is Will. If you like listening and... Shit. Hey, this is Will. If you like listening to guys talk about old school wrestling, follow me and Charles on Wrestling with the Past podcast on Place to Be Nation.
So you got the script, yeah? You all got it?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, this sounds terrible. The Titans of Wrestling... Oh, brilliant. Sorry. The Titans of Wrestling are...
Pete, I'm a lead analyst for a show and breakdown matches.
Kelly, lead historian. I'm a jobber lover. Are you?
Johnny and I drink.
And yes, me, Pop. We watch old school wrestling and love it.
Titans of Wrestling. You know you want to hear it.
What's going on? This is the Godfather, Nate Milton, with an offer you cannot refuse. Each and every week you can join Marcus Vandenberg, Big Nasty Alfred Kunawa, and myself on the Kings of Sport podcast, available exclusively on PlaceToBeNation.com, your one-stop spot for the best in sports and pop culture.
Hey, this is Ben Morse from Marvel.com as well as the Brad and Chad Show, and I've got a new podcast. Well, I'm part of a new podcast, Place to Be Nation's Main Event. Hosted by Scott Criscolo every other week, it's a roundtable discussion with myself, Andrew Reich, Steve Willey, Jordan Duncan, and an assortment of special guests as we talk wrestling today, the big questions, and our feelings. Please, please, please check this podcast out, because if the ratings go down, I know I'm the first head on the chopping block for Justin Rosero. See you guys every other week on Place to Be Nation's Main Event.
I'm Scott Criscolo, and your new home for sports is Place to Be Nation's Extra Point. Join me and the doctor, Giorgio Bellino, for your sports hookup, whether it's NFL, Major League Baseball, NBA, colleges, or the Cowboys MMA Blitz.
Forget about it. Plus, join me for my prescription where I will solve all the world's sports problems with my own brand of medicine.
That's Place to Be Nation's Extra Point here on PlaceToBeNation.com.
In Rhode Island and looking for great food and a fun atmosphere, we'll be sure to stop by Bonehead's Wing Bar, 131 Washington Street in West Warwick, with over 65 different wing sauces and dozens of sandwiches, burgers, and appetizers. In a fully stocked bar, Bonehead's has something for everyone. Bonehead's also shows every WWE and UFC pay-per-view, features live music, weekly trivia, and much, much more. So be sure to stop in, tell Matt and the crew that Police Simulation sent you, and become a Bonehead today.
What's up, wrestling fans? This is Jeff Peck, and you can check out my wrestling podcast, The Still Real to Us Show, every Saturday right here at PlaceToBeNation.com. It is a wrestling podcast from a fan's perspective, and we're not doing it in our mom's basement. So check it out every Saturday right here at PlaceToBeNation.com.
It's still real to me, damn it!
Looking for new wrestling, sports, and pop culture voices? Head over to PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. We have an extremely talented staff that covers comics, video games, and all facets of entertainment. Our sports coverage spans all the major professional and collegiate sports, including MMA. Our fresh takes on professional wrestling are some of the best on the internet. Don't forget to check out our fantastic podcasts as well, including the voice of Ring of Honor, Kevin Kelly, exclusively at PlaceToBeNation.com. the only place to be in your pop culture world. Also, be sure to check out our friends at thehistoryofwwe.com, prowrestlingonly.com, Scott Keith blog at rspwfaq.net, and piledriverwrestling.net.
Okay, we're back on the Place to Be Nation reaction show for the big payback pay-per-view, special event, whatever you want to call it this month. But guys, we're in the home stretch, and first up, Stephanie and Daniel Bryan. He must relinquish the title, or Brie is fired. Chris, what'd you think about this segment?
I was curious to see how it would do as far as crowd reaction. And I was, you know, pleasantly surprised that the crowd was really into the segment, really into Bryan. Made him look better than he's looked the past couple of times he's been out there, where it seemed like the chants weren't as vocal and the people weren't doing the yes stuff as much. So that was refreshing. Bree's enunciation tripped me out a little bit on the "I quit." And I love the slapping to the face.
Right.
Because that was finally the payoff that we finally got. It should have happened a long time ago. Finally did it.
Yeah, she slapped the push up.
Yeah, she slapped her. And supposedly Steph pissed her pants in this segment. So maybe she could say that she was slapped so hard and not urine out of her. But, huh? Yeah. And she's doing quite good tonight in that little neon green turquoise ensemble there. So, all in all, Seven was really good.
Johnny, what did you think about this?
I loved it. Although I predicted, I looked at my buddy next to me, I'm like, she's going to say, "You can't fire me, I quit." That's the only option here. It's like, you either give up the title or we fire your wife. I mean, she's going to quit, you know, because they're not going to have him give up the title. That's not going to happen. And that is what happened, but the way they went about it was great. Stephanie, oh my God, talk about stuff painted on. Growl. For a woman in her late 30s who's had 3 children, yes, sir. Ooh, nice.
Alrighty then.
But I loved the slap, everyone just going ape shit about, you know, the yes, yes, yes. This is the only time ever Brie has been actually decent on the mic. I loved it. I thought it was fantastic. And it gave all of, not you guys, but I'm going to say you, the listening audience, all of you listening audience who had some weird, sick need to have Stephanie McMahon not just verbally humiliated or, you know, psychologically humiliated. Now you got your physical humiliation that just you so needed so much. You know, you sicko weirdos who need physical violence on women. And there you go. It was fantastic. I loved it. And the crowd was apeshit. And I loved the way they shut down the CM Punk chants. Because Brian, at first, didn't look like he knew exactly. He was kind of smiling. And Stephanie saved that. And said, "They want to see you quit, just like CM Punk did." And it's like, that was well done.
Dylan, what'd you think, buddy?
Man, the WWE has got a lot of good non-wrestlers. They've got a lot of good talent that aren't actually wrestlers at this point. You got Paul Heyman, you got Zeb Coulter, you got Lana, you got Mean Gene on Legends House, who's actually the best non-wrestler in the world. I mean, he's friggin' awesome, you know. And then you've got, seriously, all joking aside, he is like the funniest thing on TV.
He's fantastic.
But then you've got Stephanie McMahon, and I mean, honestly, the key thing to this segment is that just Stephanie is just so great in this role. It's actually unbelievable how good she is. Mm-hmm. I thought Bryan really needed this segment because he definitely has lost some momentum. Some of it's not his fault, you know, but
all of it's not
really
his fault.
Yeah.
Well, I would say some of it's not his fault. Because I feel like there are mitigating circumstances that he probably has contributed to, that we as fans don't want to believe. But beyond that,
did he kill
the point
dad?
Is, The point is, he needed this segment, and it was a big segment in front of the right crowd. All of it I thought was at least good. My minor criticism with this would be, actually, I think it kind of, it speaks to how weak Daniel Bryan is on the mic, because Stephanie really did save this segment, I thought. I think it really helps Bryan that he's in there with somebody who's such a hateable and such a good heel on the mic, because I don't know how good he would come off in a lot of these segments. Now, he's been carried because he's so over, he doesn't need to talk. You know, he just has to make looks and say a couple fired up words here and there, and he gets over and he stays over. But I do worry going forward about him. When they put him in a position where he has to carry a long mic work segment, I'm still not convinced he can do it. But up until this point, they've managed to hide that weakness, which I do believe is a weakness for him, and it's not really mattered. And Stephanie is a large part of why. So she was tremendous, and that's really, I think, the key thing for this segment.
What's your take, Scott?
I do like the fact that it was short. It was not as drawn out as I thought it was going to be. The whole thing is that there was, I guess there was a shadow on the back of Stephanie's skirt that made it look like she peed. I don't know if she actually did pee or not, but I think the baby face cheer for Brie was that we won't see her anymore. But it was just filler and nothing more. They're not going to take the belts off Brian because he should be ready by Money in the Bank. So other than that, it was simple fill. There was nothing expected that didn't happen.
And see, they can milk this now for another segment for tomorrow night. So
yep.
They just keep it going.
Yep.
The show.
All right. Anyway, let's move on to something that hopefully is over, finished. This is the finale. Please, God, let this be the finale. Having said that, because I am so looking towards a new feud. Having said that, Dave Meltzer called this match, John Cena versus Bray Wyatt, Last Man Standing, a match of the year contender. Mm-hmm. Johnny Sorrow, was this a match of the year contender in your eyes?
You know what? I'm not the kind of person who watches anything and goes, that was a match of the year contender, because that's not me. You guys know me. But holy shit, was this one of my favorite things I've seen on a wrestling show in a long time. This match, I loved it. It was killer. It was so, okay, here's how I'm going to describe this. And I'll let everyone else go on the moves and all this shit. This was the greatest 1995 ECW main event in 2014. It's Raven versus Sandman or Tommy Dreamer. Tommy Dreamer. And Raven's got, let's say, the Pitbulls out with him or even Stevie and Meanie. And here goes Tommy Dreamer. And then here comes out the Public Enemy to even the odds. And that's what this match was. It was one of those. It was all over the place. It kicked ass. It's one of these matches I can't even really describe because I was too busy enjoying it. And everyone here who's here in the room cheering, going, holy shit, wow. I love this. If this is the end of the feud, and it should be because it's the best match should end the feud. I don't want an ending because I'm tired of it, because I'm not tired of it. This can go on forever as far as I'm concerned. But
good for you, Johnny. Stand
well, I love it. I love it. I love the fact that Bray Wyatt is John Cena's ultimate antagonist. He's the yin to his yang. It's the perfect evil versus good. I love it. And, you know, it ain't Randy Orton. It's Bray Wyatt. And but I understand you want to end it. There was no better way to end it. I love the final spot, which could be considered hokey by some, wasn't. It was perfect. Just everything worked. I lost my shit throughout this. I became a fan. I wasn't thinking about, you know, spots and booking and anything. I was just going, holy shit, yeah, wow, woo, and booing and cheering at my TV. Granted, I cheer the Wyatts because I'm a smart, intelligent person.
Because you could be a Wyatt.
Philosophy. Yeah, I know. Yeah.
Did you still have your beard?
No, I don't have any more.
Man. Well, let's move on to somebody else who could be a Wyatt. At least last time I saw a picture of him. Dylan. All right. Is this a match of the year? You still got your beard, Dylan?
Yes. It's slightly groomed, but not by much.
Okay.
I don't know on first watch whether it's a match of the year, which is a kind of a pretentious answer, but it's my answer anyway. I don't know on first watch whether it's a match of the year candidate. What I would say, Johnny compared this to 1995 ECW. I could see that, and this is coming from somebody who watched all the ECW there is.
I thought you'd get that.
But I almost felt like the main event was even more so in that vein, and I'll explain why when we get there. This match actually, to me, sort of reminded me a lot of your WWE Attitude Era stuff, with like your Dude Love versus Steve Austin match from Over the Edge 98.
Yeah.
Except the Wyatts are way better stooges than Patterson and Briscoe. So, you know, you had, I mean, Luke Harper's lucky to be alive after that superplex spot. His back, he just went straight back. That was like a necro butcher level bump. You know, there was nothing there to save him at all. And the Uso, I mean, a lot of credit needs to go to those guys, because lots of times when you have a match that's, quote, overbooked, end quote, the extraneous stuff either takes away from what's in the ring, or it detracts from what's in the ring, or it is annoying and you want to see more of what happened in the ring. In this case, it was really well done so that it made sense with the match. If you've been following the feud on the TV, it made perfect sense. It was a good use of both teams. Would I have rather them had a match? Probably, but again, it's kind of the theme with the show. Since they didn't do the match, what they did was really awesome, so it's hard to bitch about it. The Usos took some incredible bumps. They took some great spots. Bray and Cena really were out of this world going down the stretch, especially in terms of what they were doing. But it's kind of amazing. You know, I've said this. The thing is, WWE, for all the criticism about the last match, which I didn't like at all, and about the Mania match, which I did like, even though a lot of people didn't, I said all along, WWE doesn't have bad last man standing matches. I can't think of a single one I haven't liked. So I was pretty sure this was going to be at minimum good going in, regardless of how you feel about the angle, regardless of how you feel about the feud. It's a match type that the WWE always does well. And this is another one of those matches that completely delivered. I love the finish, by the way. You know, I can see how people would think it was hokey and cheesy, and it definitely, I think Chris said this was the most, on Twitter, it was the most Cena way of winning a match. I mean, that's kind of true, but that fits. And I it was kind of cool because they actually ended up delivering on the Buried Alive stiff just in this match, not Kane versus Daniel Bryan. My only minor criticism, and again, this is really not a huge criticism, but Bray's now lost this feud. So, again, when Bryan comes back and he wrestles Kane, because we know that's going to happen, who the hell's going to be the next guy he wrestles? I mean, they don't have anybody in Bray. It looks like, I mean, they've positioned him as the most logical opponent, but they just don't have anybody that they can feed into that next slot for Bryan, and that concerns me a little bit. But again, I don't want that to take away from the quality of the match, because it was certainly a excellent performance by all parties involved. It's hard for me to say it's a true match of the year contender, because there's a couple matches off the top of my head that I think were better, but it certainly isn't something that I would, you know, I mean, if somebody said that was their match of the year, I wouldn't think it was odd.
Well, this brought the work and the spectacle. And that's, I think, why everyone's going, boom, you know, wow.
Well, yeah, but so is Wyatt's Shield from Elimination Chamber, which
that's
is probably
true.
My
that's
pick.
True.
That's
true.
Okay, well, let's move on. Scott, what did you think?
I know a lot of people were expecting this whole Cena's going to go to the dark side. Even if he stays a face or wins, he's going to the dark side. I didn't see that. I definitely think that the feud needed to end. The promos were getting repetitive, and that's not Bray Wyatt's fault. He gets dealt what he's given. Having said that, I agree that the last man standing is probably one of my least favorite gimmicks because it's just used so much and it's so easy because you can have a heel, you know, you can have a babyface win without a heel getting pinned and vice versa. But the match was really good. Match of the year. The stream at my friend's house was very clunky tonight, so I can't say whether because I didn't watch it really in a good flow. I have to watch it again. Maybe I'll throw it on tomorrow. But it was really good, and there were some good spots. But I do think that we needed to see a different John Cena look, and we didn't get that. We got the same old boring, you know, hey, Ingenious, throw the, you know, the box over the hole or whatever the hell he did. And, you know, yay, same music. And I didn't see anything different. And I think that's what upsets me. There wasn't any extra something in the way that John Cena went about winning this match, even though everyone thought that it was. I just didn't see it.
Okay, fair enough. Chris?
I agree with Johnny's ECW thing. I thought of that as I was watching. This is Dreamer and the Pitbulls against Raven Richards and Meanie type shit.
Speak into your phone, Chris.
Yeah, that's what I said earlier. I thought it was, like Johnny said, it was like the Dreamer Pitbulls versus Raven Richards Meanie type stuff, you know. But the one difference is, though, is it wasn't a continuous deal. They had their little stuff at first, the dive train. Then they went away, and then they came back and did the insanity mm-hmm. after that. So some ways of seeing them break could take back the focus of the match. John Cena is a scary man. The way he picked up those steps and launched them like
holy
a long dart right in the Bray Wyatt's face on the floor, that was a tremendous spot.
That's a callback from the Umaga match.
Umaga match.
From the 2007
right.
Royal Rumble.
Right.
And this match, to me, is right up there with that match as far as Last Man Standing matches. Those are the two standard bearers right now. The finish was good for what it was, I thought. Cena, you know, that's his deal. He always finds a way to outsmart in these types of matches, outsmart the heels. And he did it again. And I thought it was a cool spot. I thought they may have could have moved that case over a little bit more because there was a nice little gap there between the cases where Bray could have, you know, pushed it away if they, you know, in real reality. But of course, he wasn't going to do it. But yeah, Luke Harper is nuts. Mm-hmm. Jey Uso is nuts. And this feud, you know, we talk about this feud. I think this feud is up to Usos out a lot. It's giving them the main event rub from Cena, and the crowd was hot for the Usos.
Oh, the Usos are so over now.
Yeah, they were doing the Usos chant. The Usos didn't even start it. The fans did it themselves.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, all in all, this was a home run segment. I had this tied as match of the night with the main event. So, yeah, all in all, great show.
Interesting. Let me add something to this match. After watching it, I didn't get the same feeling I got. Now, I was at the Royal Rumble 2007 live, so to me, the Umaga match is still kind of like the match to compare it to. I don't think it hit that level. Having said that, I want to kind of talk about the John Cena character. I think a lot of people who are tired of John Cena are tired of him because they want to see the evolution in a character. You know, even like Hogan, when Hogan would get booed or whatever, eventually he becomes Hollywood Hogan, and it creates a whole new life. It creates a whole new dynamic to who this person is. We accept that John Cena is going to be the face of the company. He's going to be the focal point, whatever. But we just want to see that extra dimension to his character. And I think that's where people are bothered by it. And I don't know if anyone disagrees or agrees with me, but we'll just real quick.
I agree with that.
You know?
I agree with that, Will. But let me here's the problem. The company lost $350 billion in one day. They're you know, 2 days or whatever. They're not going to change. Like,
right.
Nobody wants to see a Cena heel turn as much as me, believe it or not. Even though his character doesn't bother me nearly.
I'm not even talking heel turn, Dylan. I'm just talking
how
kind
do you
of
make
evolution.
Him an edgy babyface? Here's the problem. How do you make him an edgy babyface without turning him against the people that buy the merch. And I think that's the problem. If the company had better writers, I'm sure it would be possible. But in the world the company exists in, maybe this is just me being cynical. I'm not sure it's possible in the world that they actually exist in. And the problem is, if the net, let me be honest, if the network was getting more subscribers than it has so far, and if they hadn't completely shit the bed on the TV rights deal, not to turn this into a news podcast, but if that had not happened, I think it's a very real possibility we could have seen the John Cena heel turn in the next 12 months, or even a really major adaptation or change of his character.
I would also add that if all the unfortunate circumstances that happened to Daniel Bryan didn't happen, and Bryan was able to carry some post-Mania momentum. Yeah.
I mean, both of those things, that could have really been an opportunity, but every single time they've been in a position for this to happen, the last time I really remember where there was a chance I felt like for Cena to sort of maybe not completely turn, but go tweener or alter in some way was during the whole thing with Punk in 2011. And he came back and he beat Ray, who was really over as a babyface and a big merchandise seller in his own right for the title on Raw in a match that he shouldn't have even got. It was just like a totally like, I mean, it was a match that made my daughter, who's like your ultimate not smart fan, hate John Cena forever. He got this free shot to beat Rey Mysterio, who had to go through a whole tournament. And they had an opportunity there, and then Rey got hurt, and then all the crazy. And it's like every single time there's been a chance, something happens that makes it increasingly less probable. And as much as I want to see it happen, there's no way they're going to take that risk when he's – I mean, there's nobody moving merch close to him. Like, it's not even like there's anybody where, oh, that guy's really close, you know. I mean, there's nobody in the same universe as him as a merchandise mover. And, the reality is, when all these other revenue streams are so terrible, and they've just taken these two huge risks, and they've lost their ass on these two huge risks, one more so than the other, they're not going to take a third huge risk. So, it's like, I completely understand Scott's point. I completely understand your point, Will. But I honestly think we're just going to have to accept the reality of what John Cena is, at least until the network becomes a completely viable business model. For
well, let me throw this to Cesaro. Hold on. Let me throw this to Johnny Cesaro because I know he wants to talk about this. Let me pose this to you, Johnny. Okay. I know in the past, like, you've been really critical about fans not embracing or turning on the product or whatever. Ooh, I mean, is this kind of... Yeah, you have. I mean, it's...
Once, and you hang on to it like a goddamn crab.
Christ. Always talking about the douchebag fans. Having said that, Johnny, I mean, do you think this is where we're stuck with Cena? Is like he's just going to be the guy some people are going to cheer, some people are going to boo, and that who we get is who we
get? Yes, but my point was I really don't think what goes on in storylines has anything to do with the stock prices. And all that shit, I think it has nothing to do with it whatsoever. I like Dylan's point about, okay, a revenue stream. You don't want to, kill the John Cena revenue stream. That's
the only reason you brought it up.
That's dead on. But I really don't think that, because there was like, it was going, well, expect them to start pushing more steroid guys because he lost his money in the stock market. It has nothing to do. It has nothing to do with the product on the air. None whatsoever. So and people who do think that, I'm just like, you guys aren't getting it. It's got nothing to do with that. Now, to your point, they're not going to change John Cena, because of what Dylan just said, which is dead on, and B, why would you? There's no point in it. There's no fucking point in it unless you're going to make big money with it, and there's no point in it. Just because lots of, quote-unquote smart fans hate his act, it means shit in the long run. Until it becomes... Okay, here's how John Cena turns. Global Force Wrestling by Jared actually gets some momentum, and they get Cena after he's been worn out, and they turn him into Hollywood John Cena, and suddenly are competitive for 2.5 years. That's it. You know, he's Hulk Hogan, man. He's it. And it'd be dumb to turn him. I don't want to boo John Cena. I like John Cena.
I think when Vince finally gives up control and Triple H is in charge, that's the best chance you'll get at John Cena turning heel.
It can be done well, story-wise. It can be done well, but it ain't going to happen for at least a while now, and there's no point to it because it's throwing money away. Whether it is, like Dylan said, about merchandise, or just no one wants it. The current thing that exists works.
Okay. Anyway. Before we move on, Scott, do you have a final take on this?
I definitely feel it is pretty safe to keep Cena where he is. The combination of merchandise and product and in-ring product is not totally connected, but I do think that they are at the moment. They want to make sure that they do have the consistent T-shirt revenue stream and that kind of thing. But you do need the perfect scenario to turn him heel. And I don't think anybody tonight was expecting him to, turn heel. I think they just wanted to see a little more desperate-looking John Cena. And I feel like his matches, as great as they are, sometimes from a psychology perspective, have become very formulaic, and eventually that's going to run thin. But the matches are still, when he needs them to be, they're still pretty good.
Yeah, I think that's what the point I was getting at is that you want to see even some depth to his character in the ring, and I think that usually sometimes that runs thin. But having said that, let's move on to a far more important match, Paige versus Alicia Fox. All right, Dylan, so this women's match happens. Alicia Fox has been channeling her inner crazy. What's your take on this feud she has going on?
Well, I do like Alicia Fox. I think her crazy, sort of weird, I don't even know who she's channeling with this, but I enjoy it. I think it's a distinct gimmick for somebody in the Divas division. Her and Paige have had some pretty good matches. I'm not as high on some of them. I know a lot of people grade the Divas matches on a curve because the expectation isn't typically all that high, but,
lots of curves.
I think this is. I think this match was hurt a little bit. This was like one of two things on the show that was hurt for me watching it, the NXT TakeOver show. The first thing was the commentary, which, I already talked about. Scott did as well. This was the other thing. I was not as high on the Charlotte and Natalya match as some people who were calling it like a match of the year contender, but I did think it was a really good match. And, they got a lot of time. The NXT Divas title was treated really like this really big deal. And in this match, it was fine. I didn't think it was bad. I did think it was probably the worst match on the show. They worked hard. Both women took some big bumps. I love Paige's finish. But, they put it in the death slot. And I understand why they do that. But one of these days, I want to see a Divas match on a WWE pay-per-view treated like a Divas match on the NXT show. And I know some people say, well, it's completely different because the setting's different and the way the Divas are presented is different. And I completely get that. But the only way to change that is to give them a chance to get the matches over. Way to change it.
I think the closest we got to that, Dylan, was Natty versus AJ from this last TLC pay-per-view.
Yeah. I mean, you're probably right. And I feel like they really could do it. I don't think they've got enough talented women on the roster to make it work. I mean, they've got at least a handful of women who I would say are pretty good workers at minimum. So there's no reason that they can't do it. They just aren't doing it. This wasn't a huge disappointment or anything because it was about what I figured, but I kind of wish that they would give these ladies a shot to get 10 minutes in a spot on their show where they're not going to get no heat just because of where they're placed, and just let them see if they can get over. I mean, let them see if they can engage the crowd because they did work hard. I didn't think the match was that well put together, but I mean, when you've got 6 minutes and you're coming after this crazy match that just aired before, you got no chance anyway. So it was fine. It wasn't bad, but I think it speaks to it really speaks to how much they're wasting some of the talented women they do have. When you go and watch that Charlotte Natty match from NXT TakeOver, and it's so good that people are talking about the match of the year, which I think is nuts, but it was a good match. And then you see this match, and the talent is probably about the same level. I mean, it's not like these women are less talented than those two, and they just are not. It just doesn't work because of the situation and the way it's promoted and the way it's thrown together.
Right. Well, what did you think, Scott?
I love Paige, and I want her to keep winning.
Nice and sweet.
There you go.
Chris?
I'm not as over as the Divas, Chris.
I must admit.
I
find Chris more over.
I don't think Alicia Fox's post-match act is as over as some people think it is. Like Meltzer, who thinks it's way over with the fans. It gets a reaction, but it's not as over as they think. And she has to start winning. I know she won one match against Paige on television, mm-hmm. but I think she needs to win some more, you know, and then still act crazy to stay over. But I think this one needs to end. Paige needs to now find another opponent, whoever that is, who knows. But the difference between NXT and the way that the division is treated here, like Dylan said, is night and day. So it's they need to change it.
Johnny, any thoughts on this?
A bit. And just kind of compare with the Natty Charlotte Flair match. The Natty Charlotte Flair match was really good. Match of the year? No, fuck no. That's ridiculous.
Johnny, but you watch it for fun. Don't worry about that match of the year stuff.
I can see where people were like, it was one of those, you know, wow, that was so much better than we thought it was going to be. And it was good, you know, and it's fine. The worst part about it is that, you know, well, obviously Natalia took after her mother and it is hot, and Charlotte took after her father and looks like Ric Flair in drag and is just the worst so-called pretty girl ever. She's got lats.
Okay. We're on Paige versus Alicia Fox.
This match, I fast forward through all of it to get to the end to wait for the crazy bit. And that's it. Next.
All right. Well, I enjoy the crazy thing, Chris. Okay, I like the Alicia Fox craziness. I think that the problem is, like you said, that they didn't build her up to Paige. They just started her off as crazy with Paige.
Oh, they're gonna put her with Sandow somehow as these annoyed people who aren't getting their due. That's going to be something that I think they're going with.
Okay, that could be interesting.
It'll be Job Squad, you know, 2014, no one cares.
All right. Well, now we come to the main event, the Shield versus Evolution. And we have the blue. Now, Scott, I know Evolution is one of your favorite factions of all time. I know you have them in the Hall of Fame already. even though Batista debuted his new blue gear tonight, which I know everybody's talking about. And Scott, your thoughts on the main event?
I thought it told. Now, I was at Extreme Rules in Izod, and this match was better. I think it told a better story. I think the first probably 15 minutes of Evolution just beating the tar out of all three of them was a good way to get it going. I think Evolution was desperate, and they've pretty much have been not with the lower hand, not the upper hand, for most of this feud. And I think the booking of having them just beat the snot out of them and then have them make this crazy comeback out of the blue and then just pin all of them, I think was exceptional.
Yeah, there's that color again, the blue. Anyway, continue.
Yeah, the blue. Yeah, out of the blue, out of the blue Tista, and I thought it was exceptional. And these are Triple H's guys. He likes all of them, and he's going to get them over. You know, he's 0-3-1 this year in his return, whatever the hell it is.
Oh, thank God for that.
You know, and because he's doing the right thing. It's not about wins and losses. It's about the future. And obviously, he's butting heads with Vince about the future backstage, but he's doing what needs to be done, and that's putting these guys over. So I thought it was a great match, better than Extreme Rules. Can the feud end here? Yeah, I think it can.
Yeah, it has to.
I think it's time to break. The problem that a lot of people on paper thought this card was a little shaky anyway, and that's because a good hunk of main eventers / upper mid card were in this match. So it's time to split them up and get the card a little stronger when needs to spread these guys out and give them some more matches. But I enjoyed it. It was a good main event.
Before we get to Chris, I'm going to question that. I actually predicted that the match was stronger, or the card was pretty strong going in. I thought that this would be a good show. And I thought it looked like a great card. What's that?
I thought it looked like a great card on paper.
Yeah, so I'm kind of surprised, Scott. I guess your circles thought that this was going to be a bad show.
I think a lot of people on paper don't, when they, you know what it is, Will? When you don't see a title match, a lot of people think, oh, shit. They go back to, like, No Way Out of Texas.
Yeah.
You know, they think of that as the template for, wow, there's no title match. Oh, this card sucks. And I think a lot of people were kind of worn out by the feuds, so they were like, oh, they'll sleepwalk through this. And I'm pleasantly surprised it didn't.
Yeah.
You know. So I do think that some people around me thought that the card was not strong, but on paper. But you don't wrestle the card on paper.
Right.
So I'm pleasantly surprised that it was better than I anticipated.
I guess with me, I'm kind of glad Evolution is together right now because it keeps all three of them in only one match, and then wrestling like these world beaters like the Shield. You know. Thank God for that. You know. Chris, what's your thoughts?
Yeah, this was a fantastic match all the way around. The booking was very well done. Everybody got their chance to shine. There's some insane spots. Seth Rollins is, you know, we talk about Luke Harper and Jey Uso are crazy. Well, Seth Rollins is pretty damn crazy, too, jumping off the video wall, or 9 to 10 feet down like that. Roman Reigns taking that brutal punishment from that cane. His back looked horrible. You know, from those cane shots, because he's not Sheamus pale white, which, you know, with Sheamus gets cane, you can totally see it. This dude's got some color on his skin, and you can definitely see all the welts and bruises just forming immediately. So that was great. Ambrose, you know, another guy who was tremendous. The spot with where Evolution were doing the mockery of the Shield fist, and Ambrose just come flying on top of him was great. The finish. Hey, I would have never thought that they would have did a clean sweep. I would have thought that somehow, someway, so one of the members of the Shield would have got beat. I knew all the Shield would win the match. That was a no-brainer. But to have the Shield just go through them, 1, 2, 3, each member getting an elimination out of the deal, this was the ultimate blow-off and proof that of the difference between Triple H as the performer and Triple H as the businessman is right here. I mean, he knows how to do business, and he did it the right way. And I think that tomorrow night we'll see Batista get blown off. I think they'll probably blame him for the loss, and him and Orton probably beat the shit out of him. And that way he can get him off the show. And now we're going to Money in the Bank and see how the Shield does there.
What did you think, Johnny?
I adored this. I did think at first the crowd
adored.
Was,
I like that. Adored.
Adored this. The crowd at first was still, their breath was still taken from Cena Wyatt, definitely. But you know, hey, who gives a shit? And I was just watching this build and build and build. I'm going, this is going, I keep going, is this going where I think it's going? Yes, it is. Yes, it is. And it was just so amazing. I love Blue Tista. Dave Blue Tista has always made fashion choices that have been questionable, but makes it work for him. And apparently, and they pointed out that those long blue sleeves are some sort of modern athletic equipment. And if they say so, I believe it because It was fantastic. He just makes him look like more of a dick.
Doesn't he play some blue guy in the upcoming adventures?
A green guy, sir.
Oh, whatever.
Drax the Destroyer. Drax the Destroyer. But no, that was all Batista being the hippest 45-year-old. You know, yeah, he's hip, he's cool, he's 45. And this was it's such a great brawl, but because it was great, because at what point Evolution had it, you know, they were kicking their ass, you know, by the end, boom. I mean, this was the most ass Evolution has shown. I mean, I'm sorry, the Shield has shown ever in a six man. I mean, they had their asses beat, but by the end, boom, 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 it comes down. No, one, two, and Triple H standing there holding his sledgehammer like this old man. This is my
great
game.
Visual.
No, this is my game. Yeah, yeah. Boom! Nah, motherfucker. Boom! It's time. Boom! And I know these are his boys, and it was awesome. Awesome. Oh, for everyone's like, Triple H sucks, he never wants to play anyone ever. Well, maybe he was saving it for this, because it was awesome.
I will say this, I did have Triple H being the last guy to survive. So.
But dude, he looked pathetic. He made himself look pathetic.
Yeah, no, I'm just glad I called it.
Good, it was so good. And I was thinking, I'm like, man, they're going to have a hell of a job to do following that Cena Wyatt match.
Yeah.
And by the end of it, I'm like, hey, they did it. Fuck, that was awesome.
Well, let me jump in here, Johnny. When I saw it, I'm going to disagree with Scott. I like the Extreme Rules match a lot more than I like this one. And I think the thing that bothered me with this match was I didn't understand why they went to a standard tag in the middle of it. Like, they start off
that
with a
always happens. Up
brawl. What?
That always happens, though.
No. Hold on. I know it had to be in the ring, but it didn't make any sense, because I thought the last 10, 15 minutes, you know, kind of like when they started, like, just abusing Roman Reigns with the canes all the way up to the ramp of, you know, taking the other guys out. I thought all of that was really well done. And then I love the Shield comeback. I'm just saying, it didn't make sense to me why it happened. I don't care if it always happens or not. It didn't make sense within what the match was billed as a no holds barred elimination match.
Because referees feel like they have to do something to earn their paycheck, and so they start just doing shit.
It just didn't make sense to me. That little middle section where they were tagging and just kind of doing a regular thing really didn't do anything for me. But the hot ending, the last 10 minutes or so, and the first few minutes, I thought were hot shit. So I enjoyed that. But Dylan, you mentioned earlier that you did not enjoy this match, so I'm going to let you explain why, and then I'm going to let the other guys kind of argue with you.
Well, it wasn't that I didn't enjoy the match. I actually thought it was a good match. In fact, to be honest, I thought it was a very good match. What did I say? I hated it.
So you just said that you hated the main event.
Oh, no. I absolutely didn't say that. What I said was that I thought the main event was more of an ECW style match than the Bray Wyatt Cena match.
Oh,
I did say that.
You know where I got confused? Yeah. Let me shout this out for my listeners out there. The reason I got confused is because on the Cena Bray Wyatt match, you said I did not like the last match, and then you said that you liked the Mania match. But
fair enough.
You not liking the last match was you not liking this match, which is okay.
And by the way, when you say, let me tell this to my listeners. No, it's our listeners.
Well, yeah, you're right, honey, but
he is the host. He is the draw. My thing with this match, I actually sort of agree with you, Will, but this that was kind of my point about this being similar to an ECW match, and that was the ECW staple. You know, you'd have these guys would open the match crazily brawling, then somehow it would end up in a normal tag match, and then the last 5 minutes would be a crazy brawl with weapons. Like, that's how every ECW tag and trios that I can remember seeing goes. Like, it's pretty much the ECW formula for matches like that. And that was always the criticism of those matches, too. And I do understand it. It's hard. And it, in a way, it did hurt the match to me. I think my biggest criticism of this match was I just thought it was too long. Which is an odd criticism to make of an elimination match because it went, you know, 30 minutes or however long you want. But I did feel like this definitely had more of the elements of the standard Triple H wants to work as long as possible match. Like, we're damn sure going to have this classic match, and it's going to be long because I say so. I mean, I think it had more of those elements than the previous bout. Now, having said that, I'll be the first person to say that I've been very impressed with Triple H as a worker this year. I think this has been a very, very solid year for him in the ring. Absolutely, no questions asked. He's absolutely been doing the right thing in terms of business as well, you know, in terms of taking the falls, putting people over and whatnot. The match itself, I thought the other big problem I had with it, and this, I'm not sure how much of this is the fault of the guys, but Evolution just isn't over. And, you know, I mean, I don't even think that's a particularly controversial point. They just don't get reaction. I mean, for guys that are as big as stars as they are, and the guys have been on the top of the cards as long as these guys have cumulatively, I mean, here's the best example, I think, and Will texted me about this kind of joking when we were watching the show, but they did the face-off with Reigns and Triple H, which was supposed to be this big spot. And the crowd barely buzzed at all for it. But then when Reigns did the face-off with Titus O'Neil on Raw in the 11-on-3 match, it got a huge reaction. So Triple H is less over than Titus O'Neil, objective. We now know that. That's supported by all the available evidence.
No.
It's supported by all the available evidence, and only a career contrarian could disagree with
that. That's not right. It stinks.
Here's the thing. The reality is, this match was a good, maybe even a very good match that would have been great with a crowd that cared more. For me, it's very rare that a crowd can make me more negative on a, like much more negative on a match, and it really isn't in this case. But I kept waiting for the place to come unglued, and they came unglued for some individual spots. But it never felt like the reaction, like with the Shield of Wyatt's, and I mean, not even close to that level. And this was a Chicago crowd. Which is, you know, I mean, the crowd that you would, in a lot of ways, expect to give the biggest reaction to a match that was worked the way this match was worked. And it was a very good match. The big spots were tremendous. I thought the psychology of it, for the most part, was very good. The Shield winning in a sweep was awesome. I loved the way they won. I totally agree that Ambrose spot when he jumped off the table and they were mocking the Shield was a great spot. I think this spoke, I mean, this was really the Shield of the Rock and Roll Express, kind of. You know, they were selling their ass off, then they made their big babyface comeback. In part by hitting the big spot.
Yeah, the Rock and Roll Express.
They were the Rock and Roll Express mixed with the Road Warriors. they're fucking that over and so awesome.
It was a very, very good match. I did not think it was real. I mean, to me, it's probably there's probably four Shield matches this year I like better, to be honest. But that's, I mean, again, the Shield are at this point one of my all-time favorite action wrestlers. So, you know, that's not really a knock on the match. It was a very strong ending to the pay-per-view, especially because of how it ended with the Shield going over 3-0. So, I really liked it. I didn't like it probably as much as you guys, but that's not to say it was a bad match, but I did think there were some flaws there. There were some problems and some things that kind of irked me a little bit. Some of them weren't entirely their fault, but Evolution, I mean, Batista is the only guy in that group that's really over as a heel, and in part he's over as a heel because the people are pissed off that he came back and was shoved down their throat. So, it's a very weird dynamic with them, and I think they used them exactly how they should have been used, which was to put over the Shield as this huge group, and I don't really see any point in keeping them together. I think at this point there's absolutely no benefit. there's no benefit to keeping them together. So I hope that's it for them. And I hope that they can find some heels that can get some real heat, because right now they are severely lacking in that regard.
So let me, what were you going to say, Chris?
Orton is ice cold as a heel right now. You know, if you watch Raw on Monday, he was getting actually more pops from the girls again, the girly pops. And he just not getting any heel heat. Triple H, I think Triple H gets more heat as a, you know, as the boss than he does in the ring. And Dave is definitely the one that's got the most heat, because the fans just want to Bautista and all those stuff. So yeah, that's the thing I'm talking about. That
and you have a fan base that nowadays that is like it's you know, the way of booing is being silent and cheering for the guys that are like, and what they
no
did,
booing is booing.
I know, but no, these modern people, like, they sit on their hands for people they don't like. They're just like, yeah, whatever. Yeah.
And another thing about that crowd tonight, and I saw some people on Twitter that were there live in the building, was that during that match was around the time that the third period was getting close to ending, and there was a lot of people in that crowd that were trying to pay attention to the Blackhawks game on their phones, seeing what's going on, talking about that. So
it was
4-4.
I actually had the game on one TV and the pay per view on another myself.
So did I. But yeah, that was a key point of the game was going on as that main event was going on. So there was a lot of people paying attention to that.
Yeah, but ultimately it was yet again Triple H, the ultimate, you know, bad guy who controls everything, and his cronies who the internet hates and everyone hates getting smashed by the new hot thing again. And
thank God for that.
You know, and that's what they did. You know, it was awesome. It was awesome.
But I gotta wonder now, you know, like I said, it's about Money in the Bank. Is that where they start a Shield breakup?
Nah.
Why break them up?
They've got to stay together.
Chris?
They've got to stay together. I see no advantage to them splitting at this point. I mean, I think they're so... I just can't see it. Because Reigns can get his singles push.
Exactly.
Reigns can get his singles push without splitting up the group. They don't have to split up the group for him to get...
Yeah. Terry Gordy was the UWF champion without them breaking up the Freebirds. It works. It can happen.
I do think it's funny to have the WWE magazine that's out now has an interview with Dean Ambrose where he talks about, you know, what does he think the funniest thing is? He talks about his former partners, Roman Reigns and Seth Rollins, because that magazine was done so far in advance.
That's hilarious.
Awesome. But no, there's no reason to break this group up, man. So
Why would you?
Hold on. Before we wrap this up, Scott, where did the Shield go from here?
That's a good question. I mean, we are 4 weeks away from Money in the Bank. I think, I don't know if now, again, I mentioned earlier that I don't, you want to take your time with Roman Reigns, who clearly is the guy that they want a little bit ahead of the other two. I don't know, maybe you have them kind of split up and chase after the one of them goes after Barrett for the IC title. Maybe you put Reigns in the Money in the Bank. He doesn't necessarily have to win it, but maybe he gets some good shots in to continue his slow build. They could go either way with it. I don't anticipate another Evolution match, though. I agree that I think it's time for, with Money in the Bank now, I think it's time for Orton and Batista and those guys to get back into the heel singles thing and go after the briefcase. But as for the Shield, we'll have to see Raw tomorrow night and see what comes from that. And I think maybe it's time for them to kind of not split up, but stay together, but go after individual things, but not necessarily split up.
What do you think?
Well, they could do a feud where Reigns, he's the focal point of the feud, it's still a group feud, but he is the focal point. So that way he can have a big angle to get him over as a single guy, but still be part of the group.
Mm-hmm.
Dylan?
I basically agree with Scott's point. I could certainly see the argument for kind of, you know, splitting them off into sort of individual sub feuds, because the thing is, the trios model, you know, has really become an effective model for WWE TV, because it's a way of, it protects certain matches that you want to get over on pay-per-view. It's a way of giving you big main events without an individual eating a loss that you don't want to eat a loss. So with the Shield, they sort of stumbled onto a new way of doing it, because WWE traditionally did not have a lot of those matches. Okay. And they stumbled into this new way of delivering high quality matches where you can have different finishes that protect the key things you want. So they can have these feuds that are individual feuds and still do trios matches, if that makes sense. You know, draw the other three guys that their individuals are feuding with into trios bouts and have the big matches on bigger shows. I mean, they could certainly do that. I think that might even be the smartest thing to do going forward. I just think the Shield are entering that territory where, you know, there's no reason to split them up. And if their run continues, we're going to be talking about them, I think, is not just a really good in-ring team, but a team that was really influential in the way in changing WWE in some respects, because this trios thing, I don't think is going to go away. I think they kind of like it. You know, I think that's why the Wyatts are the way they are. And I think I suspect you're going to see more of that. I suspect you're going to see more three-man groups, besides 3MB, of course, that are brought up to the main roster and kind of work in a similar fashion. So, yeah, I think Scott's onto something.
Yeah, that's also a great way to repackage some of these guys who are lost in the mix and see if they can spark any interest as well.
Could you imagine Sheamus, Bear, and Cesaro forming up a European Union as a trio against the Shield?
Oh, man.
That'd be
awesome.
No, and everyone would start bitching about gang wars again, so whatever.
Yeah, only with guys with talent.
Fabio didn't have talent. Come on.
We're really the fucking disciples of the apocalypse.
Jose Estrada?
Fucking factions of all time. And then they were feuding with Farouk, who is not a good wrestler.
Whoa. Ron Simmons? Hey.
Is not a good wrestler.
Come on now.
You ain't never been to Ray.
Mama.
Damn.
When D'Lo Brown is your second best wrestler in a faction.
He was fucking good, dude.
He sucked. I mean, they had to get a white wrestler in there to make the Nation a good fucking faction.
Holy cow. Look at Will here. Look at Will. Before we went on the air, he was bashing Georgians, ethnic Georgians. Now he's doing this. Wow, this is a strange turn of events.
And I was bashing. Who was the ethnic Georgian?
The ethnic Georgians, you know, Chad and Chris.
Sounds like another gang war.
The ethnic Georgians.
Yeah, no. What would that be? Jim Barnett, you know, the manager.
Yeah, my boy. No, my boy. No,
is Bobby from Georgia?
My boys will get you backstage, and I'll show you a little bit.
Where's Tommy Rich from, Chris?
Tommy Rich from Tennessee.
Okay, well that shoots that one out of the water then. Made his name.
Oh, do you want to be NWA champion?
Oh God!
All right, it's him and Dr. Smith from Lost in Space. Dr. Smith and Jim Barnett together.
that's your Lost in Space Jim Barnett combo. Is that what that is?
Hey, I'm doing both. Yeah.
Okay.
Oh,
never fear. Smith is here.
So.
Come here, Will Robinson, my boy.
Damn, Jordan, Chris Zellner getting into the...
He is from Georgia.
Oh, God. All right. Anyway, so I guess we're all calling this a thumbs-up pay-per-view, right? No.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yep.
Maybe the show of the year.
I don't know. Maybe it was...
For them, definitely. I think it's probably top to bottom, you know, as a whole package.
So far... It's only May.
Yeah, but that's all we got to judge so far.
Exactly. You know, you've had some pretty bad shows, man. So Haven't said
really.
There are some Raws that I cannot watch.
I'm talking about pay per views.
I just said show of the year. I didn't say it was pay per view.
No, I'm saying I think the pay per views have been strong. This is definitely the strongest. I think I enjoyed this so much. This was so much fun.
It's a fun show. All right, guys. Well, for everybody out there, you can catch Johnny on Titans of Wrestling, Dylan on
Wrestling
Culture Podcast, and Scott on the Main Event, and of course the Place to Be Podcast. Everybody out there, I want to thank you. We'll be back later on this month, right? Money in the Bank.
Yep.
We'll be back later on this month with the Money Bank reaction show. Thank you, and we'll talk to you again. Bye-bye. It's automatic. I win it, so you hear those horns, you finish. A soldier, and I stay under you fighting. Plus, I'm storming on you chumps like I'm thunder and lightning. Ain't no way you breaking me, kid. I'm harder than nails. Plus, I keep it on lock like I'm part of the jail. And slaughtering stale competition. I got the whole block wishing they could run with my division. But they gone fishing with no bait. Kid, your boy, hold weight. I got my soul straight. I brush your mouth like Colgate. In any weather, I'm never better. Your boy's so hot, you never catch me in the next man's sweater. If they hate, let them hate. I drop your whole clan. Lay your ass down for the 3-second tan. Your time is up, my time is now. You can't see me, my time is now. It's the franchise where I'm shining now. You can't see me, yeah. My time is now. It's gon' be what it's gon' be. 5 pounds of courage, buddy, base, 10 pants with a gold tee. It's a war dance, a victory step. A raw stance is a gift, and you insist it's my rep. John Cena trademark, y'all are so-so. And talk about the bread you make, but don't know the recipe for dodo. Aiming guns in all your photos, that's a no-no. In this pop, your lip lock, your big talks are blatant no-so. See what happens when the ice age melt. You see, monetary status is not what matters, but it helps. I'm rockin' timepiece by Benny, if any. The same reason y'all could love me is the same reason y'all condemn me. A man's measured by the way that he thinks. Not clothing lines, ice links, leather and minx. I spent 20 plus years seeking knowledge of self. So for now, Mark Brecker's living life for wealth. Your time is up, my time is now.